Don't move, just leave your dolly or a good little monitor. Lean back and stay a while now, a good little monitor.
Fred Crandall with Monitor 67 on the weekend before Thanksgiving. We're going to hear how and why the turkey was selected to play such an important part in our traditional feast. You want to bet that's one contest that not too many birds auditioned for? Speaking of auditions, here's a song from a lady who doesn't need to. Peggy Lee, I Feel It.
Feeling, you know I do love. I have never felt such true love. Violins keep coming through love. Dee 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 dee. I feel it when you're around love, and my heart begins to pound love. Then I hear the trumpet sound love. Bye. The melody so right from the beginning. Like a hit song got to be. I feel it, can't keep from singing. Of the joy your love is bringing. All the bells are ringing.
Chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day, as millions do.
Chew Wrigley's Spearmint Gum.
The traditional Thanksgiving dinner is first and foremost turkey. Then add stuffing, gravy, mashed or sweet potatoes, turnips, some like them, some don't, cranberry sauce, and, well, you know, most of us can just hardly wait. Now, we all know where the tradition of the Thanksgiving dinner started, with the Pilgrims in Plymouth, Massachusetts, but how come the turkey got to be the star of the occasion? Monitor reporter Ron Pabuda asked Dick Kleber, the director of the new Worcester Science Center, on Thanksgiving.
Dick, why was the turkey selected as the bird to feast on at Thanksgiving?
Well, as a matter of fact, Ron, it's kind of an interesting arrangement. The turkey was actually used for special festivities or special occasions long before the Pilgrims ever arrived in America. Of course, when they did arrive in 1620, the wild turkey was quite a plentiful bird. And when they saw these turkeys, they knew very well that back in Europe, even, well, 100 years before that, the turkey was considered a real delicacy. So when they felt there were so many around and they did have something to celebrate, they felt very happy that they had such a special bird to celebrate with. Now, of course, the turkey is an American bird. It wasn't found in Europe before the Spanish explorers came to this continent. They found the turkey down in Mexico. The Aztecs had already domesticated the bird. They took it back to Europe, where it was bred. And this is why it was a very rare bird back in Europe and was only used for very special occasions.
Is New England the place where turkeys are found are most plentiful?
No, as a matter of fact, when the Pilgrims first arrived, the turkey was found over most of eastern United States down into Mexico and Central America. Since that time, the turkey has disappeared over most of its range. There's only a few places left where it is in its natural habitat, and that would be down in the Allegheny Mountains, down along the South Gulf states, down into Mexico and Central America. Now, the Department of Fish and Game of most of the states, as well as the federal government, are working to reestablish it in its natural areas.
Has the population of turkeys grown over the years or diminished? What is the status quo?
Well, for a long time it was diminishing because of the overshooting. But now that it is so carefully controlled, and so many states are reestablishing it and controlling the hunting season on the wild turkey, it is reestablishing itself. And maybe in another 40, 50 years, it'll be a very plentiful bird again.
I would think that since the turkey was used on the first Thanksgiving dinner, that it would have been selected as a national bird.
Well, of course, when it was used in that first Thanksgiving, we still didn't have the United States. This was long before the United States was formed. But Ben Franklin felt very strongly about the turkey. As a matter of fact, back in 1784, he said something to the following effect. I wish the bald eagle had not been chosen as the representative of our country. He is a bird of bad moral character, like those among men who live by sharping and robbing. He is generally poor and often very lousy. The turkey is much, much more a respected bird and withal a true native of America.
Well, what happened with Ben Franklin's request there?
Well, of course, in those days, the eagle, he's always been a symbol of freedom, even though he is not really the regal bird they think of. And, of course, the eagle has been used in ceremonial effects, in religions, way back to the days of the cavemen. You'll find most continents of the world use one of the birds of prey or several of the birds of prey as a symbol of one of the gods. And so it was only natural that the United States picked the eagle to carry on its national emblem.
Dick, most interesting, and as always, thank you for joining us on Monitor this Thanksgiving of 1967.
It's been my pleasure, Ron.
The only trouble with that would be, though, if we made the turkey the national bird, then on Thanksgiving we'd be eating eagle, or maybe crow. The Charlie Colello Singers sing in just 1 minute on the Monitor Beacon.
Ask you a question to see if I can stump you.
That's how Bill Mazur plays Challenge Round, Monday through Friday evenings at 6:35. Listen and find out how you can be a WNBC winner. Helping people to help themselves, that's the goal of Community Service Society. They have no magic cure-all, but they do have over 100 years of experience in dealing with people and their problems. CSS provides professional guidance to individuals and families in trouble who can't help themselves, who need someone to turn to. Perhaps the problem is a failing marriage, or a child is troubled, or a mother is bedridden, or the fear of living in retirement without meaningful plans is haunting a man. Help them cope with their troubles. Send a check today to Community Service Society, 110 New York. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York.
At 16 minutes past the hour, it's later than you think, or maybe it's earlier, because here's September Rain on Monitor, the Charlie Colello Singers.
Thank you.
The new filter cigarette from Chesterfield. It's 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer? Wait till you taste it. The 101, it's one better.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter.
Here's Tony Bennett with Something in Your Smile.
Something in your smile speaks to me. Something in your eyes shows me the way and helps me to say the things that I could never say to you. Something in your voice sings to me. Something in your laugh makes me rejoice. And there is no choice except to let my thoughts all stray to you. Something in you is everything I've never known before. Something of your charm clings to me. Something of your warmth for just a little while. Think of me as something in your smile.
Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola, brought to you by Dodge. One look, one drive, and you've got Dodge fever. Here's Joe.
When the Dodge brothers first started making cars in 1914, they had a unique way of new tires. They took them up on the roof of the factory and dropped them down to the pavement. And if the tires bounced high enough, they were okay. Well, nowadays at Dodge, testing has become more scientific. It's all done by quality control experts. Each Monaco, Polara, Charger, Coronet, and Dart you buy is checked by trained inspectors. Parts of many engines are electronically balanced before they're put together. And the tires? Well, their safety is checked in more sophisticated ways than the Dodge brothers were used to. Still, even back in 1914, Dodge had a reputation for dependability, and it's continued right through to the 1968 models. See for yourself. Check out a new Monaco, Polara, Charger, Coronet, or Dart at your Dodge dealers. He's got the right cure for any brand of Dodge fever you come up with. According to the rules by which the members of the Baseball Writers Association of America conduct the poll, all ballots in the voting for most valuable player must be cast before the World Series. And that's the way it should be. The whole idea is to decide which player has been most valuable to his club during the season. It was after the seventh game of this year's World Series, and I was standing in the Cardinals clubhouse talking to Roger Maris. Maris said, "The only thing I feel badly about is the way things went for Orlando Cepeda. There's so much publicity around the World Series, that some people forget the season. Cepeda had a bad series, but he's the guy who got us into it. I hope people remember that. Well, the baseball writers remembered it, and they elected Cepeda as the most valuable player in the National League for 1967. It was an honor that he certainly deserved. Even before the series started, baseball people didn't feel that there was much doubt about who the two MVPs would be. Cepeda had done it all for the Cardinals, and in the American League, it pretty much had to be Boston's Carl Yastrzemski. Yastrzemski had the kind of a year a ballplayer dreams about. He led the league in hitting and runs batted in and tied for the lead in home runs. Even more than that, it seemed like every time the Red Sox got into a tough spot, Yastrzemski came to the plate. In a pennant race like the American League had, there were a lot of tough spots, and Yastrzemski kept coming through. Earlier this week, the baseball writers announced that Yastrzemski had been chosen the most valuable player, and the announcement stirred up a lot of controversy. The reason was that while Cepeda had been elected by a unanimous vote, Yastrzemski wasn't. Out of a possible 20 first-place votes, Carl got 19. One writer voted for Cesar Tovar of the Minnesota Twins. Now, Tovar had a fair year, but nothing like the one that Yastrzemski had. But even that isn't necessarily the yardstick. There's just no comparison when you measure Tovar's value through the Twins against Yastrzemski's value through the Red Sox. Elections are a big part of how this country operates, and a vote for Tovar may have honestly reflected the man's opinion who cast it. I can't find fault with that, even though I tell you I don't agree with it and I don't even understand it. There is one thing about the MVP voting that I do find some fault with. The way the balloting works, two baseball writers in each city are selected to vote. They fill out a ballot for the top 10 players. And that, to me, is wrong. Take this year as an example. No player from the New York Yankees, the Kansas City Athletics, or the Cleveland Indians got a single vote. And that means that each voter was guilty of the same thing. In at least three cases on his ballot, he was voting for somebody that he didn't think was the most valuable player on his club, let alone the American League. And to me, it doesn't make sense. Nobody can quarrel with the baseball writers' choices of Cepeda and Yastrzemski, but I still think they're giving votes to too many players. Winning the MVP is a great honor. Nothing should be allowed to water it down. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports, and now this for the associates. Say, do you have big plans for the Thanksgiving holiday? You know, if your plans are bigger than your budget, the people for you to see are the associates. You know, the nice people with money to loan you. If you need money for holiday travel, or for any good reason, chances are the associates can loan you the money you need. Just look for Associates Finance Company in the Yellow Pages. Associates, nice people with money to loan you.
Joe Gargiola is a regular on Monitor every weekend. He's also heard on NBC Radio Monday through Friday. Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. Monitor heard all across the country on NBC Radio. In the southern tier of New York State, our station is WINR in Binghamton. This is Brad Crandall, back after a brief timeout.
Ellsworth Bunker, U.S. Ambassador to Vietnam, and General William Westmoreland, commander of U.S. forces there, will meet the press today on the NBC radio network.
You're listening to Monitor at your service every weekend, whether you're at home or on the road. Brad Crandall here. Mel Allen has today's sports scores and stories, and he'll check in a bit later this half hour. About 3 minutes away, a man who predicts mild or harsh winters by measuring the fat on bears. That must be fun. If you're measuring time now, you'll find it takes the Anita Kerr singers exactly 2 minutes and 47 seconds to work their way through a song called In the Morning.
In the morning, while the world was sleeping, in semi-consciousness, I dreamt that I was holding you. Yesterday,
filter cigarette from Chesterfield. It's 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer? Wait till you taste it. For 101, it's one better.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
Hey, don't worry about a thing. It's going to be, quote, a moderate and short winter. Now, that information does not, admittedly, come from the U.S. Weather Bureau. But it does come from a man named Jim Janik, who's been 98% accurate, he says, in predicting winter weather for many years. Now, anybody can make a prediction, but Janik's method, you must agree, is a little unique. He bases his prediction on the thickness of fat he finds on bears. Now, that's getting a little ahead of our story. And our Monitor reporter, Johnny Earp, in Chicago.
Jim, my grandmother used to be able to forecast weather by the way the aches and pains she had in her body, her rheumatism and such as that. You got a completely different method. You do it with the product you have right in your own restaurant here with bears. Incidentally, how many bears have you looked at so far?
Well, this year so far I looked at approximately 10 to 12 bears, Johnny. And these bears came from this locale. When I say this locale, I mean Wisconsin. Some came from Michigan, and also we received some from Canada.
The bears range in size from what to what?
Well, I would say the bear that we examined weighed anywhere from 140 pounds as high as 450 pounds.
All right, let's get to the heart of this thing. What have you found in the way of bear fat this year?
Well, after a careful examination of all the bear that we received so far this year, I calculated all the fat on the bear, and I made my prediction for this winter to be a moderate and short winter. And this is due to a small accumulation of fat on the bear, which is about 3 inches. And like last year, when I predicted a severe, long, and cold winter, the bear at that time had about 6 inches of fat.
Could you, by any chance, have gotten a hold of some real energetic bear or maybe some bear on a diet or something for this year and didn't have much fat?
Well, I doubt that due to the fact that all the bear that I've received so far this year came from different areas. And as I said before, all of them had a small accumulation of fat. So I don't think that this could be true.
How do you now? What's your reasoning with the less fat, the mild of the winter? What is that?
Well, my reasoning is this, Johnny: is as you know, a bear hibernates all winter, and the more fat he has, I feel that he'll hibernate for a longer period of time, and I feel this way also that if he doesn't have enough fat, he wouldn't be able to survive a long winter.
Was last winter, you said they had about six inches of bear fat. Was that one of the heavier ones you noticed?
Yes, I would say this has been about the highest I've seen bear with this type of fat was last year.
What about the, have you ever been wrong, or how wrong have you been?
Well, as I said before, I've been wrong about 2%, and that was about 3 years ago. I predicted a long winter, and it was a short winter, although that particular year we did have quite a bit of bad weather.
Certainly, thanks to you, Jim Janik, the owner and operator of Cafe Bohemia, a man who specializes in the weather on the side with bear fat. I hope you're right about that mild winter this year.
I'm sure I will be, Johnny. Thank you very much.
Now, this is Johnny Herb for Monitor.
Well, Johnny, if he's wrong, there's going to be an awful lot of very hungry bears come spring. You're on the go with Monitor, your music and information center.
Sitco presents music to relax and change your spark plugs by. Sitco, you get more than spark plugs changed. Sitco can change your whole attitude about gas stations. You see, while you're waiting for us to put the plugs in, we'll take the boredom out. At Sitco, you can get some driving tips, treat the kids to a soft drink, even plan a holiday. Because we believe a good gas station can be deadly serious about your car without being deadly dull. Sitco. You may not want to live there, but it's a nice place to visit.
Here's Dionne Warwick's latest song, I Say a Little Prayer.
The moment I wake up, lift up on my Maker, I say a little prayer for you. Oh, I sparkle in my hair now. And wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you.
Forever, forever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part, oh, how love you together, together. That's how it must be to live without you. It only means heartbreak for me.
I ran for the bus, dear. While riding, I think of a tear. I say a little prayer for you. At work, I just take time. And all through my coffee every time, I say a little prayer for you.
Forever, forever, you stay in my heart.
About a minute from now, Mel Allen jogs by with all the late scores and sports news here on the Monitor. Monitor once again, this is Brad Crandall. And as we promised a minute ago, here's Mel Allen with Today in Sports. Monitor Sports is brought to you by State Farm Mutual, the world's largest car insurance company.
Hi, I'm Phil Foster. One of the big things about the new cars are those disappearing headlights, which reminds me of Louis back in the old neighborhood. Louis can make 40 or 50 headlights disappear in one night, along with a dozen set of hubcaps and a few batteries. But people seem to like Louis, because sometimes they leave their cars unlocked, in which case Louis make the whole car disappear. The other day, I'm coming out of a delicatessen, and there's Louis. He says, "Hey, Foster, what are you doing these days?" I said, "Mostly telling people about State Farm Mutual, the biggest car insurance company there is, and how they'll get fast claim service and probably save money with State Farm's low rates." I said, "How about you, Louis?" He said, "I'm a teacher now, Phil. I go around the country teaching people to keep their cars locked." I said, "Can you teach people that?" He said, "Sure. You notice that empty parking space over there?" I said, "Yeah." "Hey, what happened to my car?" Louis says, "You see, I just taught you to keep your car locked."
At the Monitor Sports Desk now, Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Brad. Hello there, everybody. On the Monitor Professional Football Scoreboard, it's still Baltimore, the professional football world's only unbeaten team. Today, they defeated Detroit 41-7, and it started with Jerry Logan returning a first-period punt 43 yards for a touchdown, ended with most of the Baltimore first-stringers on the bench for the final 13 minutes. Colts sub-quarterback Jim Ward passed 20 yards for the last Baltimore score before Detroit got its only score of the day, a two-yard plunge by Tommy Watkins. The Eagles exploding for 28 points in the second period to avenge their loss of 2 weeks ago to New Orleans, and that happened to be the Saints' first and only victory this season in the NFL. Norm Snead passed for four touchdowns, completed 19 out of 27 passes for 309 yards, in Philadelphia's biggest scoring outburst since 1959. New York 28, Pittsburgh 20. the Giants sparked by Fran Tarkenton, who tossed two touchdown passes, and by rookie Randy Minear, who scored twice. Minear missed most all of last season, in fact, all of it with a broken leg, was brought up from the minor leagues just 2 weeks ago, got his chance today after fullback Tucker Fredrickson was injured. It was a costly win for the Giants. They lost two players for the rest of the season. One of them was Fredrickson, with torn ligaments in his right knee. Also, defensive tackle Jim Moran, who broke his left leg. Los Angeles 31, Atlanta 3, the Rams scoring 24 points in the final period. In the first 3 minutes of that quarter, Roman Gabriel plunged over from a yard out, then tossed a 57-yard touchdown strike to Bernie Casey. He then led the Rams on a 70-yard march, climaxed when Ed Metter passed 18 yards for a score to Billy Truax on a fake field goal attempt. Bruce Gossett added a field goal, and combined with a ferocious Ram defense, it was Los Angeles in a runaway. Cleveland 14, Minnesota 10, in a game that proved that pro football, like baseball, is a game of inches. For example, the Browns were trailing 10-7 in the final period, just 3 minutes 28 seconds left, when the Vikings' Dave Osborne fumbled, and Cleveland's Walter Johnson recovered at the Browns' 47-yard line. Leroy Kelly then carried the final 40 yards for the touchdown in four plays, the score coming with just 28 seconds left and from 3 inches out. How about that? Kelly, who also scored the Browns' first touchdown, picked up 123 yards in 26 tries. Chicago 30, St. Louis 3, a game featuring the return of Bear quarterback Jack Concannon. He tossed three touchdown passes and ran for one. His passes were 93 and 67 yards to Dick Gordon and 51 to Bobby Jones, the 93-yarder, the longest in the NFL this year. Green Bay 13, San Francisco nothing, a case of the great Packer defense coming to the aid of an injured offense, which had quarterback Bart Starr sidelined from the second period on, subs filling in for the ailing Elijah Pitts and Jim Grabowski. In the American Football League, New York Jets 29, Boston 24. The Jets built up a 29-3 lead in the final period as Joe Namath passed for 75 and 45-yard touchdowns, and then the Patriots behind Don Troll, starting quarterback, or appearing there for the first time, came alive and they rallied for three scores that proved to be useless. Denver 21, Buffalo 20, snapping a 9-game Bronco losing string. And that's the latest sports news, Brad. Mel Allen here, friends, and now this word about VM, the voice of music.
VM, the voice of music, makes the easy-to-use tape recorders. But some people can't remember that name. Well, just repeat it quickly 3 times. VM, the voice of music. VM, the voice of music. VM. I wonder what that stands for.
VM, the voice of music, has everything but fame. You can get a whole lot more for your money if you just remember that name.
Now a brand new song by the Peter DeAngelo Singers. It's called Once.
Once there was a lonely Cinderella. Thank you.
Following a special one-hour edition of Meet the Press with guests General William Westmoreland and Ambassador Ellsworth Bunker, Monitor will continue to make your Sunday evening bright and informative. Among the guests, singers Bobby Darin and Wayne Newton. Arlene Francis talks about house buying and renovating with Theodore Bickel. Sports is covered by Mel Allen and Joe Garagiola, and the head of the U.S. Census Bureau comments on our population reaching the 200 million mark. Plenty of good music, news, and information for good listening at home or while traveling. So stay with NBC Radio and Monitor.
101. 101.
101. The new filter cigarette from Chesterfield. It's 1 millimeter longer than the hundreds.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter longer? Wait till you taste it. The 101. It's one better.
A silly millimeter longer.
101.
A silly millimeter.
Montgomery's Orchestra and Windy. Time to check on the latest developments around the nation and the world, so stay on the line for NBC Monitor News on the Hour, which is next. This is Brad Crandall.
Keep to the latest news now. It's on the air. Keep to for sports and views now from everywhere.
See it again.
They're all talking about Harold Pinter's new hit play, The Birthday Party. It's at the Booth Theater.
When you start your career, do you want to come on like the U.S. Cavalry? You can if you get a good education to start with. To get a good job today, you need a good education. You just can't get ahead without one. So if you're in school now, stay there. If you're out of school, there's plenty of valuable training outside the classroom. For details, visit a Youth Opportunity Center or see the youth counselor at your state employment service.
United States Ambassador to South Vietnam, Ellsworth Bunker, and General William Westmoreland meet the press at 6:05. Hear NBC's special one-hour Meet the Press interview with moderator Lawrence Spivak this evening in just 5 minutes from now on The Conversation Station. This is WNBC New York. It's 6 o'clock.